Choose Spirit Now presents yet another tool for spiritual awakening. Ego Watch Podcast, loaded with tips to curb that beastly little ego so that you can live enlightened most of the time. With your host, she's the creator of Choose Spirit Now, a super solar yogi and part-time ego ass-kicker, Ginger Graff Dunaway.
I'm never gonna look back, whoa, I'm never gonna give it up, no, please don't wake me now.
2, 3, 4.
Welcome everyone, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Ginger Dunaway, founder of Choose Spirit Now, your tool for spiritual awakening. And this is the 7th episode of Ego Watch Podcast, a quick pick-me-up when life gets me down. So lately, I've had sort of the perfect storm of events in my life that it got me back to that point of feeling like I was sort of on that edge of getting depressed, sort of questioning life and you know, with all that I teach and practice, it was interesting because I got to experience this place that I've been many times in my life, but with a different vision about it. I was able to sort of just sit back and watch and allow myself to experience it, allow myself to be in that space of questioning life, questioning the meaning of life. So about 3 months ago, I had my second child, my little girl, Mia, and you know, as everyone knows, with childbirth comes a lot of emotions. And so I was experiencing joy and gratitude and just, you know, that gratefulness. And also just that weight of being responsible for a newborn and all the responsibility and that comes with that. So I had my baby and I came home from the hospital. And 5 days after the birth of Mia, my big white dog, Sasha, passed away. And so she, thank goodness, waited for me to come home from the hospital. So I was there. Me and my husband were there. And so here I went from, you know, experiencing this wonderful birth of my baby girl and then experiencing really this easy transition of death for Sasha. And it was probably harder for me than it was for her. And anyway, having both of these things happen within a week, really, I felt honored, to be honest with you. I felt honored to be able to witness the birth and the death in such a short period of time. And to sort of heighten these experiences, I want to give you a little background on both. So a week after I had Mia, I turned 40. And as we all know, you know, turning 40 brings up a lot of stuff. Even though, you know, you're prepared, oh, 40, midlife crisis, whatever, you prepare yourself as much as possible. But it still does bring up a lot of questions. And for me, I was fortunate that because I was 39 at the time trying to get pregnant, it wasn't easy. And we did have to have some help. So because of that, it made 40, I was even more grateful for turning 40 and being able to bring a child into this world. And I had just a really deep sense of gratitude for that and for being able to, you know, have a second child, have this experience again, and have this other being come in to our family to be with us. And I was very grateful for that. So with all these questions in turning 40, I was definitely knew that I was exactly where I wanted to be. I was exactly doing exactly what I wanted to be doing, which was caring for this new being. And, you know, when I had Mia and they placed her on my chest, sorry, you know, but before we had the second child, me and my husband both had a lot of questions about bringing another child into the world and just all the responsibility of it. And so when they laid her on my chest and I looked at her, I had this just this overwhelming feeling of that she had always been with us, and there was suddenly no question and no fear in my mind about doing this again. And it was so surreal and amazing, and I was just so grateful that we had made this decision to try it one more time. And so I had, you know, all of this emotion about it, and then, you know, 5 days later, Sasha passes away. And again, I was so grateful that she waited until I got home from the hospital. And so I was there. Me and my husband both were there when she passed. And we knew it was coming. She had been diagnosed with cancer 2.5 months before with a 3-month diagnosis. So we knew it was coming. But she had been doing great. And she just started kind of going downhill a little bit within that past week. And so we were both there. I was able to, you know, have my hands on her as she was passing. And of course I was bawling, crying, but I was telling her that I love her over and over again. And again, I was just grateful for being able to be there and honored to witness that, and for her to allow me to witness that and be there with her when she went. And so just to give you some more background on Sasha, she was a rescue. I'd gotten her about 4 years ago, and she was a white boxer. And white boxers, they tell you not to breed them. They're, you know, they tend to have more issues, and she did. When I got her, she didn't have a whole lot of hair. And actually, when I went to go see her for the first time, I rounded the corner in this girl's house and saw her in this crate. And I took one look at her and I thought, oh my God, she's gorgeous. And one thing that the rescue girl was telling me was that she didn't think people wanted Sasha. She had had Sasha for a year at that point because they thought she was ugly. And, you know, she didn't have a whole lot of hair. She had some dappled, freckled skin. She even had freckles in her coat, which I figured out later once she grew some more hair back. But people either thought Sasha was ugly or they thought she was gorgeous. I had people close to me who would say, "Ooh, your dog is ugly." And sometimes I'd be walking her and I'd have people stop and say, "Wow, that dog is gorgeous." And so it was interesting to see people's different takes on her. But when I rescued her, the girl told me that Sasha didn't play with toys. And so, you know, that was fine with me. I was used to my other boxer, Cayman, who is still with me, who liked to fetch the ball. But anyway, so we took Sasha home, and we let her watch Cayman play with the ball, and just got her used to, you know, our home and our house. And we got used to what worked for Sasha because she did have food allergies. I had to figure out the best food for her, and she had ear mites, and I had to figure that out. And so it took a while. She had these little growths that would burst and blood would get everywhere. So sometimes I'd walk into my little girl's room and it would look like someone had just been shot on the bed. And of course we have all white bedding. So anyway, it took us a little while. We had to have some of those removed, and but every now and then, you know, she would have something that would bleed out. But anyway, I fell in love with this dog. Okay. There was just something about her. Maybe it was the fact that she wasn't perfect and she had, you know, all this stuff going on. and she had some funny traits about her. She had this sort of funny tooth that came out of her gum, and her gums looked funny. They were sort of hardened and had something growing on them. She had horrible breath, but she had the most beautiful eyes that I've ever noticed in a dog. And she would always look at me, always had her eyeballs on me. And that was one of the hardest things once she was gone, was not looking over and just seeing her looking right at me all the time, waiting for me, you know, waiting for me to look at her, give her little hand signals, talk to her, take her on a walk, whatever. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself here. So about 1 or 2 months into having Sasha, one day I was leaving to go to work, and I left Sasha inside, and I went out to my car, and then I realized I forgot something, so I went back in the house and caught her. She couldn't hear very well, so I caught her in the act. She had gone into my little girl's room and stolen a stuffed animal and brought it out into the living room, and she was romping around, throwing the stuffed animal up in the air and playing with it. And I sat there in amazement, because you know, the rescue girl said that, you know, she didn't play with toys, and here I was watching this dog, and I was so happy. I was so happy because she looked so happy. And sorry again. You know, it just, oh my God, my heart just grew around this dog. It was amazing to watch her be so happy, and to know that she was a part of our family, and she was no longer to me a rescue dog. She was our dog. She was our family. And God, she just brought me so much love and light. And so when she was gone, when she passed, you know, those first 2 weeks were so difficult, because like I said, it was hard not having those big beautiful eyes looking at me. And I would find myself in sort of this haze, and granted I was exhausted because I had a newborn, so I was up, you know, every 3 hours throughout the night, but I would find myself just walking around the house when the baby was asleep, and putting my hands on Sasha's bed, putting my hands on the couch where she liked to lay, putting my hands in the pine straw in the front yard where she would lay and wait for me to drive home. And I would just cry, you know, and experience this grief and the sadness that we all experience when we lose someone close to us. So I felt like I was in this sort of perfect storm of events, you know, this birth, this death, turning 40. And to be honest with you, I felt grateful even for this great, I shouldn't say just sadness, because there was a lot more than just sadness. There was gratitude, there was joy, there was sadness, there was guilt, there was a little bit of everything wrapped into one, and I was even grateful to be able to experience all of this and know that, you know, this is a part of life. But at some point I realized that I almost felt like I was tipping over that edge into that sort of more depressed feeling. And as I watched myself move through all of these emotions, I kept thinking and asking myself, wow, you know, am I going to get out of this? Am I going to be back in life with, you know, sort of that naive sense of just comfort? And but then we had the mass killing in Orlando happen, and we had the little toddler who was taken by the alligator at Disney World. And so then I had even more of that feeling of, you know, what is going on here? You know, what is the meaning of all this? What's the point in life when these bad things happen? And it just took me even deeper into that space of realizing the fragility of life, realizing that, you know, all we're guaranteed is this very moment. You know, we don't know if tomorrow is going to be here. And so I got to this sort of place, and I realized that when any of us have this stuff come up, whether it's the personal stuff that we ourselves are going through that bring up a lot of emotion for us, or these other things that are happening outside of us in the world, we watch and see this stuff happen, it brings us to this place where we can either see the meaninglessness of life, or we can see the preciousness of life. And it took me a while. It took me weeks, actually, to think about this, but also experience a little bit of both. And I knew that when I was experiencing that feeling of life being meaningless, you know, by seeing these catastrophes and tragedies happening, and then, you know, also just watching how easy it was for birth to happen and death to happen, I realized that the ego was in total control, you know, allowing me to see all of this a certain way and to then feel like life was meaningless because of it. And I knew then that I wanted to see this a different way. I wanted to see life as precious, not as meaningless. And what I realized as I kept going through this process was that it's as simple as shifting our perception. It's kind of like back in the day when you drank a few beers, and you had those beer goggles on, and Joe Schmo over there in the corner of the bar, who was looking a little pudgy, now all of a sudden is starting to look pretty hot, you know. And literally, it's that simple in terms of shifting our vision in life to seeing life as meaningless and feeling the subsequent depression because of that, to seeing life as precious and experiencing the subsequent gratitude that comes from that. And once we make the shift, then we go into this deep sense of gratitude, and from there we begin to hug our loved ones a little harder, a little longer, and we make sure that we tell them how much we love them, how much we care about them. And so now we go from feeling depressed, feeling like life is meaningless, to realizing that life is a gift. It is precious. It's not here forever. And we now can sink in and enjoy this moment while we still have it. And in doing this, we honor the people that have passed. We honor their memory. And this is what God wants for us. This is what our loved ones want for us. They don't want us to be sad and feel this sense of loss and meaninglessness to life. They want us to sink in, dig our heels in deeper, and cherish every moment that we do have here, because it's not here forever. You know, it's not going to be here forever. And instead of being sad about that, being grateful and honored to even have this experience in the first place, and to even have the ability to cherish it and enjoy it the way we can. So I have a little exercise down below this podcast that you can download, and I want you to go ahead and do that, because you may not be in this sort of funk right now, but maybe if you do get in one in the future, you know that you'll have this little exercise, this quick exercise to do, when life gets you down. And so go ahead and download, and please share it with anyone that you think might could benefit from it also. So I want to leave you with one of my favorite quotes from Albert Einstein. And it so relates to this podcast, and it's one of my favorite quotes. So here it is. Albert Einstein: "There are only two ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle. The other is as though everything is a miracle." This is Ginger Dunaway with Ego Watch Podcast and Choose Spirit Now, your tool for spiritual awakening. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll see you next week.